Jema. So we are continuing with volume 5, Collected Works of the Mother. The year is 1953 and we can image to ourselves the mother sitting in the playground and with all her children, young and old, perhaps as young as 8-year-old and as old as 80-year young. So they were all gathered around her and she is giving, literally giving. As I said, Mother and Shubindu's life is all about giving. If one thing one learns from Mother and Shubindu straight away is how to give. Not once they have asked. This is knowledge which is priceless. These texts, they could have even simply just the price. Now the collected works of the Mother are 5,500. It used to be 2,500 just some time back. 18, 19 volumes. Can we imagine? Priceless treasure. And for me at least, on a very personal note, I had read so many books. Books after books, which included Vedas, Upanishads, Gita and all of them. But you want to look for something which you can connect not just intellectually, philosophically. Something which can quench the thirst of your heart. But at the same time, something which is like a beacon light in everything that you do, you think, you feel, you live. So the Mother's writings are the highest wisdom, connecting you to what we would in our false pride say lower activities, everyday activities. And that is the beauty of it. It's all comprehensive wisdom. And as I said, I was just mentioning that it is a pity and a great matter of one of the tragedies that I think that human beings are deprived of this treasure. Even when it is present in the homes, I know that it has been there. I know people who had the volumes and for 30 years it just kept lying in their place. And one day one of the ladies who had come to consult regarding some tragedy that happens in life, this is Jorhat, and she started weeping and weeping and weeping. And I wondered, I thought she has come to discuss something and she's weeping naturally, some problem is there. And she was weeping. After 1 hour of weeping, she said, all these volumes that I see there in your room, in the cupboard, I have them for 25 years and I have not touched them, but suddenly I feel crying so much because why haven't I read them? I said, you can read them now. Probably had you read them, many of the problems may not have occurred in life. And it's so true. And even when problems come, she shows us the way. Earthly life is imperfect and limited. One of the best things about Sri Aurobindo is that he accepts that part. But he says, if you look for ultimate happiness, ultimate satisfaction within the human limits, with the human ways, it is something like a non-starter. It doesn't work out like that. In human level, by human means, you can only have a workable balance. And who knows which is better, a perfect human balance by human means or a little bit of disequilibrium introduced into it through which we seek and aspire and begin to search. And so, but instead of people becoming disenchanted and they start talking about renouncing life and going into some other beyond, they tell us that, but this is because man is a transitional being. Man is a middle passage and what awaits for man is something much greater and much more beyond. And that gives life its true sense and purpose. But while we are transiting, transition is also not easy. We want to, there is a passage, it's all right, people want to go to some place which is beautiful. But we are here and there is a big gap between where we stand and where we have to reach. And therefore for the transition, they have given us everything to help us move from the human to the divine. From the human where divine is hidden to the divine where human is only an instrument, divinized, meant for manifesting all that is beautiful, high, wonderful and divine. So this is the background and we'll come straight into several things we hadn't read. And one of the things that I want to read is, for instance, several places, Mother has spoken about illness, what illnesses are due to. And it's amazing. How, what is in it us that attracts the illness? Illnesses are because of adverse forces. But what opens the door within us? And one of the things which opens the door, repeatedly she says, is fear. And she says that fear is the greatest impurity. If you are afraid of something, it is as if you were attracting it. Come, come, come. Now the beauty is, at the animal level it is known. Long back I had read the story of a hunter. You know, Jim Corbett Park. So that's where he was a very famous, Jim Corbett was a very famous hunter. So he said, he has observed that there is a kind of smell that animals emanate when they are afraid. And tigers and these predators, they are attracted by that smell. They know that here is my hunting ground. By the smell, they are attracted. So those who are afraid, they emanate a kind of smell which attracts adverse forces. And there is so much more which is hidden inside which we don't know. So that's why we must not allow anything negative to come in our thoughts, feelings, even in the midst of the most impossible situations. And we have the story of, lost horizon, footsteps. What was his name? Antonio Salvicius, who was in a jail, in Nazi jail, concentration camp. What can be worse? We cannot imagine the kind of tortures. And yet Sri Aurobindo comes to him and he tells him to hold on, to have endurance, to have faith. And he says after a few days of following this teaching, he started experiencing bliss in spite of the same situation. And then eventually, of course, he was released. So someone asked the mother, when one feels frightened, what should one do? She says there are several ways. One is, of course, if you are in contact with the psychic, it's the best way. But if one is not in contact with the psychic and the psychic light, when one does not have this psychic contact but is still a reasonable being, that is, when one has a free movement of the reasoning mind, one can use it to reason with, to speak to oneself as one would to a child. So reason has its own place in the whole scheme of things. Explaining that this fear is a bad thing in itself, and even if there is a danger, to face the danger with fear is the greatest stupidity. There may be a danger. It's not that fear means there is nothing. There may be a real danger. Let's say you have you are attacked, you are in a state when you're surrounded by terrorists. I mean, some of us have had that experience. Now, if you are afraid, that's not what is going on. Fear will paralyze you. You won't be able to act, or you will end up doing something very stupid. So to keep cool, to keep your balance, to keep yourself calm is anyways the best thing, even if there is a danger. That's what she is reminding us. If there is a real danger, it is only with the power of courage that you have a chance of coming out of it. And if you keep your head cool and have the courage, you will get the direction. You will know which way to go. Otherwise, you are gone. You are, as they say, easy game. If you have the least fear, you are done for. So with that kind of reasoning, manage to convince the part that fears that it must stop being afraid. This is within the reach of every human being. See how practically. First is psychic being through the psychic light. Psychic by its nature, fear cannot touch the psychic being. One of the signs that you have realized the psychic is, you cannot be afraid. Because even death will not make you put any fear, because you know that death is only a passage. In fact, there is no death. This is one of the things that when you are in contact with the psychic being, you know. So there is no fear. Then second is reason. Third is, if you have faith and are consecrated to the divine, there is a very simple way. It is to say, let your will be done. Nothing can frighten me, because it is you who are guiding my life. I belong to you and you are guiding my life. The problem is, people have not actually have that I belong to the divine. They belong to 1001 things and people except the divine. So therefore the fear comes, they can't say this. But if you have faith that, you know, there is the divine. If nothing else, there is the divine. And this divine is all powerful. Nothing else. And he is all knowing. He is the all wise. then isn't it best to say that, well, let your will be done. And he will have his own way. We have to be patient, endure the journey. He has his own way of taking us out, because we don't know the knots of our nature. We are looking for immediate cures. But he knows all the knots, why things are the way they are. And when he completes the cure, it is a complete package. I have seen it so many times. He plucks things from the roots, little by little. He will not do it very forcefully, because sometimes if you do it forcefully, then a possibility may go away. So he'll do it slowly, slowly. He does like a microsurgery within a being. So this is the way of the divine, and all of us who have witnessed it, it is so true. That acts immediately. Of all the means, this is the most effective indeed. It is, one must be truly consecrated to the divine. You can't just use this as an excuse. Suddenly one day you can pray as an arth. I'm in distress. And every distress call is heard. There is no doubt about it. And the mother explains that why, in spite of it, things come back. She says, because people don't have sufficient faith, or they close the door again. They keep calling back the problem. They love their problem. That also she will reveal to us. If one has that, it acts immediately. All fear vanishes immediately like a dream. And the being with the bad influence also disappears like a dream along with the fear. You should see it running away at full speed. I had a very interesting experience as a doctor, somebody who came. And I would see that when the patient was there, the energies would start getting as if sucked. I didn't know what to do. And once I wanted to hand over the case to somebody, and my professor fortunately said, no. You must take it as a challenge. So I said, okay, this is a different challenge. So I didn't know what to do. So after the patient, I would feel so exhausted and drained. So one day, mother has her ways. While I had a picture of the mother and playing with it, I just put her face unwittingly like this towards the client. And I felt everything got cut off, like as if a whole energy transaction got cut off. Within a week, somebody told me, unconnected, said, you know, when it was about Bhaiji, that when Bhaiji was asked mother that when we are facing somebody who is very hostile, what should we do? So mother said, you put me between you and the person. I said, oh, this is so beautiful. Put the mother between you and the person. And automatically, I mean, of course, we have to do it with an image. Mind has been given such a beautiful thing called imagination, which we misuse. So this is what she's revealing. Okay. Now, there are people having a strong vital power in them. And they are fighters who immediately lift up their heads and say, ah, an enemy is here, we are going to knock him down. So this also helps. If you have the spirit of the fighter, you have a problem and a challenge. You say, I am not going to just allow myself to be bogged down by it. I take this challenge. And I have seen people, even with seemingly impossible illnesses, take things with that courageous fighter spirit. And how they come out of it. Because even if you don't believe in God, when you start helping yourself with the right attitude, God will help you. And if you take the reverse, then it's like we are turning away from the grace. So she's reminding us this. But for that, one must have the knowledge and a very great vital power. One must be vitally a giant. That does not happen to everyone. So she says there are different ways. Several places she's talked about it. But then there comes a question that somebody has asked the mother that, well, basically all illness is because of disequilibrium. So what are the ways of re-establishing it? And she speaks about it, and then she says something very interesting. It's a long passage, so I'm reading just a little portion. So she says, it is every doctor who is something of a philosopher will tell you. It is like that. We doctors give only the occasion. But it is the body that cures itself. It's even logical and scientific. If your immune system is zero, so do whatever you want to do. You give the highest antibiotics. You can't keep supporting all life with antibiotics because your body at some point has to fight. You are augmenting it. You are helping. Through medicines, we are helping. We give antibiotics, we are helping. If the body is strong and capable of fighting, it will fight off itself. But nowadays, immunity has become weak. So a doctor is a help. If we believe doctor is curing or the medicine is curing, it's a great help. That's it. And that's what the mother puts everything in its right place. And it's just measure. Well, there are bodies that do not allow equilibrium to be re-established unless they are made to absorb some medicine or something very definite which gives them the feeling that they are being truly looked after. But if you give them a very precise, very exact treatment that is sometimes very difficult to follow, they begin to be convinced that there is nothing better to do than to regain the equilibrium, and they get back the equilibrium. Now, mother's humor, you will see, is something very interesting. So she narrates the story, and the story is of a neurologist. So she says, I knew a doctor who was a neurologist and treated illnesses of the stomach. He used to say that all illnesses of the stomach came from a more or less bad nervous state. Restlessness, all this, many of the excessive activity of the stomach. There is a state where there is a nervous tension. She is referring to that. He was a doctor for the rich. And it was the rich and more and unoccupied people who went to him. See, this is the problem. If you are busy with work, you don't have time to think about illness. People, she would say, very often when people would say, so and so is even, having a psychological problem or physical problem, she would ask one question, is he coming for work? Yes, mother, very regularly. Okay, don't worry. Work is such a cure, such a purifier. Engaging the mind with, occupying it with something which is other than yourself and your petty troubles and your stomach ache and your body ache and all this. If you continue to work, many of the problems will just go away. Simply because the body will heal, you are not attending and augmenting it. Mind, by attending to a problem, augments it any amount. So she is saying the rich will go to unoccupied people will go to him. So they used to come and tell him, I have a pain in the stomach. I cannot digest. And this and that. They had terrible pains. They had headache. They had, all the symptoms. He used to listen to them very seriously. I knew a lady who went to him and to whom he said, now you see, your case is very serious. But on which floor do you live? On the ground floor? All right, this is what you have to do to cure your illness of the stomach. Take a bunch of fully ripe grapes. Now you see, if you misquoting mother, if you take this part and say, mother has advised this. Okay. Mother's advice. Take a bunch of fully ripe grapes. Do not take your breakfast, for breakfast upsets your stomach. Take a bunch of grapes, hold it in your hand like this, very carefully. Then prepare to go out, not by your door. Never go out by your door. You must go out by the window. Get a stool and go out by the window. Go out in the street, and there you must walk while eating one grape every two steps. Not more. Yes, not more. So you have to finish the bunch, no? You will have stomachache if you eat one single grape every two steps. You must take two steps, then eat one single grape. And you should continue till there are no more grapes. Do not turn back. Go straight on till there are no more grapes. You must take a big bunch. And when you have finished, you must return quietly. But do not take a conveyance. Come back on foot. Otherwise, the whole trouble will return. Come back quietly, and I give you the guarantee that if you do that every day, at the end of 3 days, you will be cured. And in fact, this lady was cured. This is an example. See, the many things, the power of suggestion, occupying the mind. See, people want to do something. So sometimes surrender becomes very difficult because we are used to doing. And surrender also implies that you do whatever you do. But it implies that beyond my efforts, there is the grace. I do my effort and then there is the grace. So, this is how she has described. Okay, there is something very interesting. So a child asks, sometimes there is a lot of work. One does not know what to do. Mother says, a lot of work? Truly a lot of work? See, that question has a lot of meaning. Many kinds of work, mother. For example, in our studies, we have many subjects to read. So the mother asks him, what do you do the whole day? From morning till evening. How much time do you devote to your toilet, to take your bath, to dress? Approximately, not exactly to a minute, about 3/4 of an hour. How much time do you take for eating? 15 minutes. Every time? How many times per day? 4? All right. How much time do you spend in gossiping? That you don't know, she says. So the disciple, the child says, I don't gossip. Mother says, you don't gossip? You are a marvel. Indeed, I shall put you on a pedestal. You don't gossip? So the child says, yes, I gossip. But when I have work, I don't gossip. Mother says, yes. And how many hours per day do you need to work to be able to do your tasks? In the morning, sometimes I get up at 4:30. To do your homework? You're still half asleep, aren't you? At 4:30? Are you quite awake? No. Ah. And then you start working immediately? Yes, sometimes. Then he says, because I am leading exactly towards that. When you work, if you are able to concentrate, you can do absolutely in 10 minutes what would otherwise take you 1 hour. See, time management sutra she has given. You'll have books on time management. And at one place he said, if you learn to concentrate, you will shorten the time. So this is a sutra. But in such a nice way, sweet way. If you want to gain time, learn to concentrate. It is through attention that one can do things quickly and one does them much better. If you have a task that should take you 1/2 hour, I don't say if you have to write for 1/2 hour, of course, but if you have to think and your mind is floating about, if you are thinking not only of what you are doing but also of what you have done and of what you will have to do and of your other subjects, all that makes you lose thrice as much time as you need to do your task. And so she goes on. And see, just imagine children asking such problems and she is giving an answer which would apply to all levels for all of us. To learn to concentrate, to practice. And you cannot concentrate if you don't learn how to dismiss the discursive activity in the mind. Because the moment we concentrate, mind is throwing up all kinds of bubbles, suggestions, thought forms, waves here, there. So we can't concentrate. Concentration means whatever I want to focus upon, that I can focus. It doesn't matter, whatever. And that's what makes the difference. A yogi is all concentration. That's what makes a yogi ultimately, the power to concentrate. Sri Aurobindo says, in material life or spiritual life, success comes if you know how to persevere and how to concentrate. So this is the practice that one has to do. People often ask, so concentrate on anything. Mother has given so many ways. For example, she says, if you want to practice concentration, she says, whatever work you are doing, you may be sweeping the floor, do it with concentration, full attention. So whatever one is doing, if one does it, and full concentration means the mind, heart, they're aligned, not that the mind is thinking of something else. And it's difficult. When we try doing it, we find it difficult. So these are some of the questions people have asked. And then, okay. One of the places he says, one is surrounded by what one thinks about. So it's so important to have a mastery over thought. I'll just quickly read a little bit of that. So somebody asks, I wanted to ask you a question. Now this is mother is asking. Oh, there is very interesting. Okay, anyways, we'll come to this. Sometimes it's good to say it's very interesting and not read it. So that people read it. What was interesting on page 384, which was not read? So we are on page 385. So mother is asking, we said at the beginning, one is surrounded by what one thinks about. You understand quite well what this means? Turning to a child. Every time you think of something, it is as though you had a magnet in your hand and were attracting that thing towards yourself. You understand? See, it is so beautiful. That means if you think of the divine, you are attracting the divine. She herself is giving the secret. If you think of beautiful things, you are attracting beautiful things. That's why prayers, goodwill, all this helps. Sometimes people ask, for instance, you have a morning beautiful message. Sometimes people ask, but it doesn't happen. I said, yes, but you must still do this. Maybe it is avoiding much worse things which could have happened. Simply because it's adding like a cushion, like a buffer. So all the time we must think of beautiful things. It means when negative things come, we have to make a conscious effort to throw them away. Otherwise we'll be surrounded. So I've seen people who, for example, in their dreams, they see a lot of snakes. And invariably I have seen, these snakes are their fears. So these fears come out as snakes. And this fear may have come for various reasons. And then it's your own fear. Now see how counterproductive it is. The more you see, the more you are afraid. The more you are afraid, the more you see it. So this is a cycle. Of course, not all snake dreams are fear. The different kind of serpents. To see a cobra may mean evolutionary energy. All kinds of things. So I'm just saying in general. Every time you think of something, it is as though you had a magnet in your hand. Now there are people who have a very, very bad habit of always thinking about all possible catastrophes. And are in a sort of constant apprehension about some calamity befalling them the next moment. Mother even says if you live in the atmosphere of such people, you will start attracting catastrophes. And she gives a very interesting example of two people, a couple. And says strange things would happen whenever they would go in a group. Something or the other will happen. These two will also have, but very mild. But actually it was the presence. Sometimes one person's presence can draw a lot of things in the atmosphere, of which we become unwitting subjects. And are in a sort of constant apprehension about some calamity befalling them the next moment. I know many like that. There are some here. She is speaking about the ashram. She knows. You don't have to tell her. She knows. Mother could read all the thoughts and it was so interesting to see her. I've told this example. Exactly what the person is wanting, what the person is needing. And this raised from somebody wanting a rose from the mother, and the roses have got over. Chomdi was narrating me and she said, oh, I won't get now the rose. And the mother is, there are 15 people in front of her and she is giving different. Suddenly when she comes, she takes a tray out of from below and takes the rose and says, so, you think I don't know? She doesn't even know that she knows the thought and everything. And there was another example where one lady wanted to have the darshan of, she had heard that she is Divine Mother. But she wanted to test because she was a upasika of Amba. Amba is, I think, in many areas of India, Jagadamba is. So she had her own mantra. So she said, they say she is Divine Mother, but she wanted to test. So she was using that mantra of with which she was invoking the Amba goddess. And suddenly the mother left all her work and looked at her. So she said, it must be by chance. So after a few more steps, she again invoked. Again mother left everything. Then she was so convinced. But when she goes and stands in front of her, now she couldn't help. She said, but I want to see. She said, you want to see in that form? And of special grace, God knows what she saw, she fainted. And people were wondering what happened. She said, no, leave her for some time. She will get up. She got up. And she couldn't remember anything except sudden burst of light and she couldn't take it. So that's why all this, you know, it's so important to be full of beautiful things in our head. She knows all our thoughts. So she says, there are people, and so those people who have as though a magnet in their hands to attract calamities, not only upon themselves, but upon others also, that lays a big responsibility upon them. That's why it's so important about friends. Who are our friends? There are friends who create disasters. They bring all kinds of suggestions, adverse suggestions, all kinds of things. Here also you'll meet people who will tell you just what they should not be even thinking about. They'll tell you, fill you with doubts, fill you with fears. So friends, it's so important. So there are people like that. And if one can't stop all the time from thinking about something, some have a head that runs on and they haven't found a way of stopping it. Well, why not make it run on the right lines instead of letting it run on the others? So there are people whose head is very active. So one of the exercises, write something creative, write something beautiful. If nothing else, I know people who used to just write a mantra several times. This is a very good practice. They would read the Ramayana and write the Chapai. For us, Savitri, prayers and meditation. Because at least your mind will, anyways it will run. So make the monkey run around Rama rather than Kishkindha. So slowly the monkey gets trained. Because they can't stop the mind. So at least you give it a good direction. And that was the advantage of satsang and all these things. If it is obliged to turn round and round, well, turn them to the good side. That is, if somebody is ill, instead of saying, what is going to happen? Perhaps this is going to be very serious. And if it is that disease and a calamity comes so quickly. So she says, that's how we attract it. Instead of all that, if one thinks, oh, that is nothing. Illnesses are outer illusions, translating some deeper vibrations, which are not seen. That is why one doesn't speak about them. But that's how it is. And these deeper vibrations may come and set in order what has been disturbed. And this imbalance, this illness or bad thing that has come, well, it will be absorbed by the grace and will disappear. No trace of it will remain except that of things agreeable and pleasant. One may continue to think in this way uninterruptedly. And I know somebody who was Santosh Pen, she was all with drips and all this oxygen. Suddenly she had a vision of the mother. And suddenly she says to her in the hospital, why have you surrounded yourself with all this falsehood? And then she realized, and why falsehood? Not that illness is not real, that whatever changes are being. Because your mind is running into fear and anxiety and apprehension and all this. So it's becoming one big wall. What was something which may have been easily resolved. So nowadays medical knowledge has created this difficulty, this unique challenge. There were few diseases to treat and now we have so many and with minor variations. And so that has created a lot more difficulty. The mind has entered into endless complexity. And that has created another kind of problem. But anyways, man had to go through this challenge of the mind. So she says, one may continue to think in this way uninterruptedly. People always need to make their mind run, run, run. But then make it run on the right lines. You will see that it has an effect. For instance, let it go like this. Like a child, she is explaining. that I will learn better and better, shall know better and better, become healthier and healthier, and all difficulties will vanish, and wicked people will become sweet and good, and ill people will be cured, and houses which should be built will be built, and those things which should disappear will disappear, but giving place to better things, and the world will move in a constant progress, and at the end of that progress there will be a total harmony, and so on, and continue thus. You can go on endlessly. At least we are doing some good work for ourselves and the world instead of letting it run in all the negative direction. Those who perceive the atmosphere see certain inky stains like an octopus there. She could see all these things. That people who are constantly filled with negative things, they don't realize like inky stains. You can see these things. Like inky stains, like an octopus there. Yes, like that. With its tentacles to try and upset your mind. So one of the simple things to say is just stay quiet, peace, peace, quiet. Instead of that, one will see happy formations, formations of light or rays of sunlight, or perhaps beautiful pictures, all that. One will see beautiful things. There are painters who do that and they always capture the thoughts. And see, that's the significance of these formations, which have an effect even on water crystals. People have seen, done experiment that to water crystals, if you say you're horrible, you're bad, in psychology we use the word negative role playing. It's like if you keep telling a child you are useless, he grows up and fulfills that prophecy because you have told him always. But if you keep saying even to a water that you are good, I am going to be healthy drinking this water. That's why the concept of prasad. So what happens? The water molecules, they, if you take a crystallographic image, they look beautiful. If you say a mantra, it becomes even more beautiful. And if you say negative things, it shows fragmented heart pictures. This is such a simple way of making life beautiful. Before eating, just offer it and make it prasad. If a thought comes that if I eat this, something may happen, tell it no, everything will be wonderful. So this is simple way, but if we don't, then she said, when people can't do it, I send them to doctors. Because they have this kind of, she is beautiful, and since she speaks about two more things I'll read, very interesting. So many practical things which one can apply in everyday life. So here is so she speaks about, she has spoken that we should have an aim. And what should that aim be? Your aim should be high and wide, generous and disinterested. See, people who have a low aim, they will be unhappy perpetually, even if they have all the wealth and all the health in the world. I have seen people and it's so paradoxical. They have everything outwardly one can imagine, but they are unhappy because they don't have a name. That's why she says an aimless life is a miserable life. I have seen people who are very poor, and plenty I have seen, who struggle for many things, but because their aim is high. A simple thing like, you know, I want to do service of God. I'm just saying one thing. And you will see they're happy and so full of trust. So she says, the question asked to the mother is, what does this mean? Your aim should be high and wide, generous and disinterested. This from The Science of Living. So she says, you are asking what that means? High? For instance, there are those whose aim is to make a fortune. And there are those whose aim is to find a cure for a disease. That of making one's fortune is obviously more self-seeking. All selfish aims belong to this category of low aim. And lower than the one of finding a remedy for an illness. Very simple. You're wanting to assuage the suffering of this world. Other is living only for oneself. There are those who have for their aim in life a comfortable and quiet living. with a family and children, wanting the best in the best of possible worlds. That is a pretty low aim. In any case, quite an ordinary one. And if we have this aim, suffering will come. One way or the other, life will be miserable. That's what she is reminding us. There are those who seek the betterment of the whole of society, or those who study to make new discoveries, like Mr. and Mrs. Curie, for example, who discovered radium. That is a higher aim. And see how she is describing it within the limits of her worldly life. So even serving humanity, at that some point that you want to do good in the world. So this is about low and high. All selfish aims are low aims. All aims which are for something greater good of Lok Sangrahart, they are high aims. They automatically take you into a different zone. Then there is the word, your aim should be high, disinterested. So she asked about disinterested. She says disinterested. That means what is not for one's own small personal profit, for one's personal pleasure, but solely for helping others. So even when people go to God, they want a contract. Mujhe kya milega? What will I get? So as the mother once very humorously said, oh, you want to bargain with the divine? Okay, maybe you will get some blows. So the person said, he kya? Why? Because that is necessary for your progress. If you count to divine, he will make you progress. Willingly or unwillingly, because that is his job description. Of course, if you go to the divine seeking progress, then whatever happens, it comes as a grace and you progress. So, she is saying, disinterested means not for one's own small personal profit. This calculation is so much there in life. Even when we go to God, we give something with the idea, this offering, I must get something. There was somebody who gave some money to the mother and wanted his name to be put on the tile in Golkund. Mother laughed and said, put it on the floor with the name. Who would want to put it on the floor? Something we want. Another person who gave some money and he had a lot of that inner, mother refused that offering. And a third, Sri Aurobindo, with his own humor, gave some offering and gave a list of what he wants. Gaushala and all this, you spend like this and that. So the disciple asked, what should I do? Because offering by nature is unconditional. So Sri Aurobindo says, accept the money, reject the advice. He had his own beautiful way. Okay, accept the money, his goodwill. Probably he thinks this is the way you can do good to the world. But we know better. People have this idea, free hospitals will do good to the world. They multiply diseases. Unfortunately, free medicines take away your immunity. But here is something which is giving free. How to get rid of illnesses? That we find difficult. Why? If the same knowledge you have to sit, go there, and she had a 5-day course in curing by inner means. People are charging money, by the way, in the name of Mother and Sri Aurobindo having these courses. But imagine if somebody went paying, and it helps, unfortunately. Because when you pay 10,000 rupees or 5,000 and you enroll in a course where they teach you, sit like this and then practice meditation this way, that way, as if God is worried about your anatomy and physiology. But nevertheless, you come back, I have done something. And now you have that faith. Every day I'll do this. I have paid money for this after all. I have done such a big course. And when it comes so free, so easily, then we don't even buy the books. And if we buy them, they are only as showpieces. That is the tragedy of life. So she is telling us these secrets. Naturally, the highest aim is to unite with the divine and fulfill his work. But that's right at the top of the ladder. If you live to fulfill the divine will, there is nothing else, and that's the highest. In this first chapter, I took good care not to say anything of this kind, for I wrote it intentionally for everybody, even for those who have no mystical conception. So, she wrote something in general. So, very often, we have to start from there before we can, and it should come spontaneously. Divine urge to serve the divine, know the divine should come naturally, organically, and not as a result of. But at least our aim should be high and wide, generous and disinterested. But still it goes without saying that the discovery of the divine in oneself and uniting with him and accomplishing his work is the highest and most disinterested aim and the least selfish. So she asks, what adjectives have I used? Disciple says, high and wide, generous and disinterested. She says, yes, wide. It is something that's not limited to a small, purely personal consciousness. I want my mukti. So it's not wide. It's a very narrow aim. But my spirit's liberty I seek for all. That's wide. A lonely freedom cannot satisfy a heart grown one with every heart. That is wide. I want my niche ki mukti. That is, ultimately it is selfish. The lure is there, but it's a narrow aim. Limited to a small, purely personal consciousness and its small, purely selfish advantages. Something embracing a whole, which may be a group, a nation, a continent, or the entire earth. For man, an action working on the entire earth is surely a wide action. So even in spiritual life, even about the ashrams, he said, there are two kinds. One is those who pursue a very narrow way. And she says, it's okay, there are people like that. They go fast, but it's very small. This was in answer to, what was the name of that lady from East-West Cultural Center? Judith Tyberg, Jyoti Priya. So she said, everybody tells me, no, you have to just quietly just do the ashram work and don't, because she used to give talks on, and she would learn the Vedas, the Sanskrit, all this. She said, don't listen to them. You have come for work. And yes, there are people who follow a narrow path. They will live like that. And they will find quickly. So they are right in that way. But your path is wider and more complete. It will be more challenging, more difficulties, but it will be ultimately much more complete. This letter is there actually in our archives. So even in spiritual life, you can have narrow and large aim. After that you have said, the disciple asked, this will make your life precious to yourself and to all. She says, yes, if you are useless, it is not precious. If you are useful, it becomes precious. There is nothing more disgusting than to be busy with all the little details of a narrow personal existence. And at one place he said, people who are right from morning busy with what they are going to eat. If you look at some time back, that's how households were. What we will cook for the afternoon, what we'll cook at night, isn't it? Now everybody is smiling because this is how one saw in the houses. But this is disgusting to even be occupied with these things. All the little details of a narrow personal existence. One feels empty, hollow, useless. One has no interest in life. There are people all shut up in their little family. Oh, today so-and-so is going to come. My chachas, bua, mosa, mosi. Somebody is coming. Some relative, some absolute, some relative of absolutes. God knows how many categories. And in India, you have endless variety. At least you can't even say just uncle and auntie. Huh? Chacha, phuppa, masarji, and you know. And they are coming. Somebody is meeting. What kind of, you know... It's really hollow to think of it. One has no interest in life. There are people all shut up in their little family. And if the baby coughs, they spend hours in fretting. They will talk about it, discuss, oh, you know, my baby is having a cough. That's not going to help. You know, and everybody in India is a doctor. They will suggest their own remedies. At the end of the day, if you use all of them, you'll be so confused. So she says, if the dinner is not well cooked, they quarrel. Or if the gentleman has lost his job and is looking for another, he laments, how shall I feed my family? That's existing like an earthworm in a hole. She has her own beautiful. And then she says about psychic choices, how the psychic decides the life. So you see, it's not like psychic will choose all beautiful, good conditions, rich family and nice everything. No, psychic may take challenges because that's how it is. It wants to grow. Whatever will help it grow, it will go to that. It loves to take challenges of life. And I've seen people who love challenges and these are people who want to progress. Whereas those people who don't want to progress, they may say whatever. They don't like challenges. They want just comfort zones. So she says psychic acts like that. And then one more, last one at the end. It is very, very interesting. And okay, this is about, I hope okay. So this is a very profound mystic truth she is revealing. And this is, beauty is, this is based on a communication between the mother and Sri Aurobindo, letter communication. This letter is when she is in Japan. So the mother says that she saw from early on that people who were marked for something exceptional, often they had a tremendous difficulty chasing them, almost like a snake behind them. They carried this shadow. And she says ki it is almost like, and right from childhood she has seen people who are marked for something exceptional. Very early on they will have really challenging time, difficulty, shadow, their own shadow. This difficulty is not outer difficulty, but in their own nature, something which will resist that advance. And there is this letter of Sri Aurobindo. Mother has spoken about this as the evil persona. Persona is a mask. So it's like a masked, hooded, something evil which is chasing. Like a person who is meant to be very generous will be chased by this avarice, very conjuice. A person who is very miser actually holds within himself the quality of generosity. Somebody who is meant to be full of faith will be chased by the shadow of doubts, doubts, doubts. So she says, what the Sri Aurobindo writes to the mother, what you say about the evil persona interests me greatly, as it answers to my consistent experience that a person greatly endowed for the work has always or almost always, perhaps one ought not to make a too rigid universal rule about these things, a being attached to him, sometimes appearing like a part of him, which is just the contradiction of the thing he centrally represents in the work to be done. It is attachy from another world. But who is going to challenge? There is a line in Savitri that it kept on pushing her toward the goal through this challenge. And dug the gulf deep for her to cross. That's how he describes. Or if it is not there at first, not bound to his personality, a force of this kind enters into his environment as soon as he begins his movement to realize. Its business seems to be to oppose, to create stumblings and wrong conditions. In a word, to set before him the whole problem of the work he has started to do. It would seem as if the problem could not, in the occult economy of things, be solved otherwise than by the predestined instrument making the difficulty his own. That would explain many things that seem very disconcerting on the surface. And this we know, many, especially people marked out for yoga. And the mother speaks about it, that yes, it's very true. And why this is so? She says, well, she says, it's like the serpent biting its tail. Then after a little bit of description, she says, then if you understand the image, instead of going all the way around to change matter, it is much more easy to do the thing directly, for the two extremities meet, touch, since it is a sphere. Hence, instead of doing all that, it is much better to do this. In fact, psychologically it is that. The rest will follow quite naturally. Now, what is all this? We'll see in a moment. If that is done, all the rest will get settled in a matter of course. And it is not even like this. It is precisely for the convenience of work that all has been concentrated or concretized at one point, so that instead of having to spread oneself out in the infinite to change things, one can work just on the point that serves as the symbol of the whole universe. And from the occult standpoint, Earth, which is nothing from the astronomical standpoint, but from the occult and spiritual point of view, Earth is the concentrated symbol of the universe. For it is much more easy to work on one point than in a diluted vastness. All those who do the work know this. And then she says that, well, this is why in each one it works like that. And that makes sense that why India, the chosen land of the gods, is beset with difficulties. I used to put it like this, that see, other countries are still in kindergarten, so they have been given lollipops. Then as you grow into higher secondary, you have some challenges, which is beginning to come now. But India wants to do PhD in solving human problems. So all the human problems you can imagine, anything you imagine, will be concentrated here. If Ram is here, Ravan will also be here. With Krishna, Kansa will also be here. Because, why? Because so that if you change one Kansa, you have helped the whole. And then she says in each individual, she says if each individual had to work on all the problems. So each individual will find, especially those who take up the yoga, in one person, let's say, there may be a problem of fear. In another person, it may be problem of greed. Now somebody who is having a problem of greed, he will not see it, but say, oh, see, look at that person, he has so much fear. Similarly, somebody having a problem of fear will not see this, but see the other person who is having problem of greed. But this person having problem of greed may not have other problems. Why? Because for him, it is greed which has been given as his quota. When he overcomes greed, then it helps the whole universe. That's why Mother says, win your little victories. Somebody who tackles the problem of fear within him helps the whole universe in whatever small way to get rid of this problem. Somebody having a problem of doubt. So each one is given something which is known as an evil persona. One example classically is, look at Dilip Kumar Roy. When you see his bhajans, his faith in Krishna, Krishna would actually come there. But on the other hand, so many doubts, seemingly impossible doubts. So you can see that the two going together. And if you can, so you are given this, this is your problem. That is somebody else's problem. Don't start looking there. This is your problem. If you want to help the divine work, you conquer this problem. And by conquering this, you are helping in the work. Somebody may say, but I don't have any problem. Well, blindness is no cure, except to get sight. So she says at the end, and always the best borders on the worst. The two opposites are together. But it is because of the worst that you can find the best. Because you grow through that challenge. Each time you take that challenge, you take one step forward, you have grown. This is your path to the divine as far as your difficulty is concerned. Somebody else may have something else. And it is because of the best that you can transform the worst. The two act and react upon each other. It is always said that there is a dark double of all the stars and the luminous double of all the planets. Now we are talking about all this, no? Dark matter, and we are talking about the other earth the other day. But see, so much earlier. All that is the experience of the luminous earth. Sri Aurobindo has described the experience. So basically, each time we have a difficulty, we can take one of the two approaches. One is give up. Oh, I am beset with difficulties. I can do nothing. But if you take it as your personal challenge of life, as Mother says, bear your own share of the undivine, or anti-divine, she used the word, your own shadow. Then you take it as a challenge. The more every little step you take in removing it, actually you move a step closer to the divine. So that's why she gives the image of serpent biting the tail. Each time you conquer this, you suddenly automatically grow closer to the divine. For somebody else, it may be some other shadow. So this is how the universe is organized. When you look at it like this, you find it so beautiful. So everybody does not have to do everything. Each one of us are given our own quota. And of course it is understood, the greater the being in its quality and whatever, the greater will be the challenge and the shadows. And the greater the light and the help on the way. Jai Ma.